Willkommen zu AI Talks Nagele mit Köpfchen von und mit Dr. Johannes Nagele. Der promovierte Neurowissenschaftler hat seine Liebe zur Forschung nie verloren und spricht mit den hellsten Köpfen über die neuesten Trends rund um KI. Doch statt Business-Blabla heißt das jetzt Nagele mit Köpfchen.
Okay, welcome to today's episode of Nagele mit Köpfchen. This time we have some little changes, as you may already realize. So the people that know the format may be surprised that I'm speaking English. That's because today I have Richa here as a guest, and we have to speak in English, as you can imagine, because not everyone on the globe, not all great scientists on the globe speak German. So, yeah, but I think that should be no problem. And also, the other change is that this time we do it remote for similar reasons. Richa is sitting in San Francisco. And yeah, therefore, today we changed the format a little bit and hope you can still enjoy. So, the topic of today is the potential of large spiking neural networks. And in order to give you some background on this topic, I'm just gonna summarize what it is about. What are actually spiking neural networks and why they are important? So just my few sentences to this is spiking neural networks are neural networks that differ to the artificial neural networks that are mainly used in machine learning these days by that they are more inspired by the human brain. In the human brain, we have action potentials like electric pulses that travel from the neuron soma, from the cell body of the neuron to to the axons, and to elicit a signal in the synapses for the next neurons. And this way this kind of information transport is very different to the way how artificial neural networks work. And one great thing about that is that it's very energy efficient. Yeah? So evolution also has had a reason why brains developed how they developed, and why they're using action potentials, also called spikes. That's why these networks are also called spiking neural networks. And nowadays, with increased compute power and so on, we are basically able to simulate such networks as well, also train them in parts. And not only that, but also we are getting closer to really nice hardware possibilities where we can run these kind of models very, very efficiently. And I think that's also what we are going to talk about. Yeah. Yeah. So how I stumbled upon Richa is because he is one of the authors of SpikeGPT, which is a very interesting paper or a very interesting model that, as you may already hear in the name, combines spiking neural networks and transformer models. So it's basically, to my knowledge, the first large spiking neural network that can be used for language. He's currently doing his PhD in electrical and computer engineering at the University of California, Santa Cruz, started in 23. His supervisor is Jason K. Ashwagarian. And they are doing quite some cool stuff together. But also before his PhD, Richa was doing a lot of interesting things. And he did his bachelor at the University of Electronics Science and Technology in China. And he got his hands dirty on open source neuromorphic projects. You may have heard of the SSN Torch or Spiking Jelly packages or tools. And yeah, he's not just a neuromorphic engineer, but he's also quite knowledgeable in the field of large language models. And that is what it makes it really interesting. And yeah, I'm really glad to have you here, Jeff.
Thank you. Thank you for your invitation. And yeah, it's very nice to meet you in your studio. And so yeah, thank you for me introduce. And yeah, I'm also very interested for this topic that we will talk about, the neuromorphic, the potential of using the neuromorphic in the spike in the like in lots of around tasks like the language modeling, which is most popular in these days. Maybe start with 2022 when ChatGPT has released, and we will also I worked with lots of projects in spike neural networks from the computer vision, which is popular maybe before the ChatGPT releases, which is the most popular part of the artificial intelligence. And maybe later, yeah. Later now we are working with the generative pre-trained transformer, which we along as ChatGPT with language modeling. Yeah, I start with this computer vision task, but now we are main working with the NLP task for me. And yeah, we are up. About the ChatGPT release 1 year. Yeah, ChatGPT has been proposed in nearly 1 year. So we are doing lots of interesting works on the ChatGPT and seeing what works well and if it has any potential to apply it to everyone's daily life or to everyone's routine. So yeah, so that's mostly what we do. It looks like that, yeah. As Johannes has been mentioned, that spiking neural network seems a very potential replacement with the artificial neural network, which is used by ChatGPT and which is most popular in language modeling in the computer vision tasks like the autonomous driving. All of these tasks is using the artificial neural network, but we are trying to explore that if that is possible to using the next generation neural network, it's a spiking neural network to replace the artificial neural network if that works well compared in these tasks. And the results we have seen now is mostly good. It means mostly that we can get the same performance and while getting higher energy efficient in the spiking neural network. And across the computer vision task from the ImageNet is what we do is like the classify the 1,000 of the is 1 million images to 1,000 classes, and it gets nearly the same precise position of the artificial neural network or ANN in ResNet. To language modeling, we call SpikeGPT. We are trying to scale in SpikeGPT to 1 billion level and trying to find this scaling law is perfectly fits the scaling law of the artificial neural network or ChatGPT. We find this is matched, and we are everything is very promising to using spiking network to see as its third generation neural network, and we can try to see it around everywhere. Yeah. So this is what we are mainly do and what we are seeing now. It's performance, it's energy efficient, and how we can do furthermore. Yeah. So yeah, I think back to you, Johannes, if you have any starts with anything. Yeah. Okay, just some introduction. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, thank you. I find it's very exciting. So maybe add some more context to this whole thing. So yeah, for me personally, I'm coming from the world of computational neuroscience. So I was a lot around neuroscientists, biologists, and similar. And so basically, I'm coming from a world of spiking neural networks, from the brain. And when I got more into machine learning, I was always surprised why people are thinking about new activation functions so far away from spiking neural networks. Yeah, for example, with these activation functions, I was used to analyze the activation functions of real neurons. Yeah, and there were so many different types of activation profiles. And I found it always a little confusing that the machine learning world is sort of focused only on few little activation functions, well defined. Yeah, and then ReLU came out, and then suddenly this was like a big jump and so on.
I
think all this flexibility, all these parameters that we are sort of ignoring in the artificial neural network world. In the spiking neural network world, you have this freedom, yeah? And this gives so much more space and possibilities for these kind of networks. And also, just to add some even more context, is we are seeing developments in this field around, like, I recently learned that Australia launched, like, a massive supercomputer that is built out of neuromorphic units. Neuromorphic is basically the hardware on which you would run the spiking neural networks. There is a lot of investment, even I think OpenAI is also sort of being interested in this, yeah, because they would be happy if they would not need to use so much energy to run their models or to train their models as well. Also here in Germany, the car manufacturers are being interested in the topic because it has the potential that when you run like these massive models on hardware that doesn't need constant internet connection but can calculate and compute stuff in place, on edge, for example, in the car, you are not that dependent on the cloud, on internet connection, and it's much more energy efficient, and that makes it really interesting for many industries in the end. But the problem was always in my eyes so far that it's really hard to handle and hard to scale these kind of networks. So what is in your from your perspective now, the what is changing? How what are the challenges when you say you reach nearly the performance of the state of the art models? So what keeps you from going beyond that performance?
Yeah, that's good. It's a very good question about how, as you mentioned before, that the spiking neural network has been seen as as a not scalable neural network, and it's just a small tiny network. This is actually a stereotype when we goes back to maybe 2018, that it starts there. Where the researcher before 2018, the researcher is many to build a spiking neural network, many to build on just a very biological possible, not looks like that interpretable. It looks like that if the neural network should be 100% follow the biological rule. Look, seems like if we are trying to learn something, it cannot be used for the supervised learning. So what is supervised learning? Like, we have a label, we need to using a label to supervise the network's its behavior. But in spiking neural networks before in 2018, they just using like the Hamiltonian rules is unsupervised. It looks like it should classify this. They just know that what is the difference between for MNIST, most simple example, it looks like the 1 and 2, the two digital number, is a little bit different. Or it can find it's different, but it cannot say that, okay, this is 1, this is 2. They can only say that there's 2 different of the type of the images. So before this area, the spiking neural network is more like looks like a toy for like the biological researchers or like neuroscience researchers. But maybe in 2017 or 2016, but this bloomed in 2018, the researchers start to using what we call the backpropagation in which is nearly dominates the neural network, the artificial neural network, and they started using it as a learning rule to the spike neural network. And because before then, the spike neural network they face a very main challenges is that it spikes. So spikes, it means that it should be binary, and binary cannot be calculated by the gradient because it's not derivable. So we trying to using techniques, we call it a surrogate gradient, using a not a precise gradient, but a surrogate, but a replace a gradient with a like a derivable functions to do a backpropagation, and it really works on it. And after that, before that, it's very small network, maybe just a few thousands of neurons, hundred thousands of the snaps. But after that, its size has been bloomed and it has been grown exponentially. So it looks like that when before that is an area of the neural or area of the modernism researcher, and after 2018, it starts with more. It starts with it can be already it can be applied to some area, some industry area, because could be used in many tasks. So after that, we start with training this network in ImageNet, which has been a golden standard of a artificial neural network. So ImageNet, if you have not heard about it, it's more like a challenge. And so what the start of the deep learning revolution, it starts with this ImageNet in 2012, I think that. Yeah, so the Geoffrey Hinton and his students, Alexander, what's his last name? Sorry. So it's Alex and the OpenAI's first chief researcher, Edward Sotheker. So the still three starts with a new network and trying to champion the ImageNet, and it gets 10% higher than the previous state of the art. So ImageNet is a truly gold standard. And after 2018, the Spike Neural Network really starts with ImageNet and gets a relatively good competitive high performance in ImageNet. Before that, it's impossible to train 1 million images and with 1,000 classes. That is nearly impossible for Hamiltonian rules or like the STD of in all your brain learning rules, which is with mimic on computer. So after the backpropagation introduced the spiral neural network can do something that's really, really paralyzed in like artificial neural network. Like artificial neural network, if they can do like the computer vision tasks like the object detection, okay, spiral neural network, they can also do backpropagation, and it's just semantic learning or like the semantic understanding, they are also doing it in spike neural network by backpropagation. So actually this why they start scaling, it starts with the backpropagation can be introduced into the neural network, into the spike neural network, because the backpropagation or the gradient learning is actually they can try to optimize any functions, even if it looks like it's a little bit weird for spike neural network, they can still optimize it. So that is, why we can try to scale up it. So the question for us before is that we need to design a very precise architecture, we find a very precise hyperparameter. But after that, we will find that okay, we do not need something more. We just need some find a relatively good hyperparameters with gradient learning or backpropagation. It can handle everything, and it works well. So that is actually what started for the spine neural network, how it can scale. It's all because of the backpropagation for me, I think. Yeah. And the second thing is that we find for your second question, that how SpikeGPT gets the state of the art and how it can go beyond. So before that, we see that the state of the art is now dominated by AIs or artificial neural networks because of the using the very high. So we have talked a lot about the spiking neural network is quite energy efficient. Yeah. So what is the cost of the energy efficient? It's mainly imprecision. Like if the precision is very high, it means that. Yeah, so it will get high performance, but it's also cost maybe 10 times or 100 times energy consumption. But for spike neural network, it's using a binary for its precision. So it means that space is occupied. It's 16 smaller compared with the artificial neural network when we're doing calculating, when we store the parameters is size. It should be 16 smaller compared with the other neural net, compared with the ANNs or artificial neural networks.
Mm-hmm.
So that is why that spider neural networks now they only mention they're closed to the state of the art, not the exceeds. So because if that it can exceed, this means that it not only means that we get a very high performance spiking neural network, but also means that all of the researchers we should be changed their rules that ANNs or type of precise learning cannot learn anything. But this is not very follow not very 100. It is not very look like general things because normal things because you know that high performance thing, high precision, you always can get the high performance in everywhere. So that is what for exceed this or go beyond it, it should take maybe a long time. But yeah, but now because we find a lot of learning rules, we're trying to optimize it. We can nearly very close of the performance. Mm-hmm. And in some tasks, we can really with some specific techniques, we can exceed this. Like imagine that classification with attention. Not self attention is attention in CV in computation tasks. We can get higher performance compared with ANNs in ResNet 101. Yeah. So
yeah, it's possible. Maybe.
Yeah, sorry. Mm-hmm.
So I understand that it's also like you need to like decide between energy efficiency and performance and so on. Yeah, this is one thing.
It's
but I think also
size. Yeah.
Also, maybe it's also the wrong way to compare, right? The efficiency or the performance with regards to these classical challenges like ImageNet and so on. That's also not, or let's say that's just a subclass of problems that could be challenged with spiking neural networks. Yeah, as you said, these are all supervised problems, and we are used to handle supervised problems in machine learning with backpropagation. So, spiking neural network community had to come up with some backpropagation proxies, so to say, in order to be able to fulfill the same kind of or tackle the same kind of problems and try to achieve this performance. But it's also kind of caging the spiking neural network a little bit, because as you mentioned earlier, the Hebbian learning rules and similar are very natural and also can lead to really powerful results, but they are just not, we cannot handle it as we are used to in the machine learning world by having labeled data and train on these massive data, labeled data, and try to achieve good performance in these classification tasks. Where I could imagine is that if one want to think like this, if we would stay with this, or if we would find a nice combination between backpropagation and Hebbian learning or similar learning rules, maybe that is also kind of the future where things will be going, specifically when these AIs are embedded into machines on edge and when they need to do continuous learning with the environment, right?
Yeah.
So that is where Hebbian learning and things like this can be very strong, I think.
Yes. So that is very very meaningful topic because, if we can use continuous learning in GPT or SpikeGPT, you can learn, or ChatGPT, you can find that it can learn with what to talk about. Like before, like now, this ChatGPT cannot learn from your history topic, from like your before that you mentioned that give me a receipt for tomorrow's dinner. But now but after that, you create a new page and trying to refresh the page to chat with another topic. It will forget everything. But if we with Hebbian laws with continuous learning, it can continuous learning what you talk about, and after that it will talk like a human, lively human, it can tell you that which one is the So after you talk with it, it's a very long sequence. very long sentences. They'll still tell you that what's my receipt and what's my receipt for this dinner, tomorrow's dinner, and how can cook with it. So this crazy. So it's a very promising area for like the heavy loads of continuous learning or unsupervised learning. So that is very makes sense that it should be the future of the machine learning community, I think.
Yeah, so my impression is also that there is a big tendency now that we move towards more like agents, so AIs that are sort of localized, that are individual AIs, that maybe your personal assistant or so. It is a different assistant than the personal assistant of another person and so on. And specifically in this area, I think we will see a lot with spiking neural networks and also neuromorphic hardware, specifically because it has this property that it can do this continuous learning very well. But maybe to just come back a little bit to your work, actually. So we were mentioning SpikeGPT, and you were also already talking about transformer architectures. So maybe to just summarize your work. So as far as I got it, you produced a language model on a spiking neural network architecture.
Yeah.
Can I say it like this?
Yes. Yeah. You can see that this is very precise, precise definition of what we do in SpikeGPT. Yeah. That's correct. Yeah.
Okay. So for our audience, is it can I imagine that you have a model where you could provide an API and you could interact with it similarly to GPT, 3 or something.
Yeah. So, So it can be offered by API. Yeah. So it looks like that we have a very large cloud infrastructure with built by spiking neural network or built by neuromorphic hardware. Yeah. So, but for the for SpikeGPT or neuromorphic things, it's mainly developed for the edge computing. For it looks like that you have your own laptop. You have your own iPhone, you have it on Android devices. It can be running on edge devices and very smoothly. So you can imagine that you can talk with your personal assistant in just with your laptop, with your iPhone, but it doesn't need to connect to the internet. And your privacy information can also be reserved in your edge computer, in your devices instead of training with chat.
So, I think what would be very interesting for our audience is to understand how well is the model working and with what kind of training data did you train it and to what is it comparable at the current state in terms of performance, let's say. Does it allow natural language interaction as people get used to it right now?
Oh, yeah. So next. Towards now, we have released a small model we call 200 million model that is mainly training with GPT-2 same corpus. So for the chat with this size, we find that this performance looks like they can do language modeling. Yeah, language modeling is just like to generate some sentences instead of chat with you. But for this version, this performance looks like just a toy. But for next level, when we're trying to scaling up to 1 billion, we will see that this can chat with a human, like ChatGPT, and it can assist you to solve some problem. Like it can assist you with write some codes, and it assists you as we tested now, and it can assist you to trying to read some books to understand some sentences and try to referalize it. So yeah, until now, performance looks like more than a little bit toy, but after that maybe we're scaling up it as we also say in scaling law, the scale up always helps for language modeling to get very really high performance, and so Yeah. So
and what kind of hardware are you using to run the model?
For training, we're using NVIDIA GPUs because it will handle everything very seamlessly. But for inferencing, we're trying to use Loihi. Yeah, Loihi is Intel's neuromorphic hardware, and its performance is really, it maybe is the world's first class is the neuromorphic hardware. Yeah, so and because it can handle maybe more than 1 million neurons and maybe 100 million of snaps. Snaps is what we call parameters. Like if we have 100 million parameters, yeah, we have 100 million snaps. So, yeah, so, but for, as you mentioned, that if you're running GPUs, it's energy efficient, it's nearly the same as an artificial neural network. We're using GPU because it's very easy to be trained, very easy to program. It's programmable, very easy. But for inferencing, we should be using very high performance neuromorphic hardware. This is what we are endeavor to do this. Yeah. But now we can still run it on GPUs to see that how its performance looks like. But for energy efficient and in its efficiency, maybe it's the best place to use it is neuromorphic hardware. Yeah, as we use. Yeah. So as you mentioned, that the new we need to run it on neuromorphic hardware, and so that is why Intel work with us. Yeah.
If our listeners want to reproduce your results, can they just go download your model or your architecture, your repo from GitHub and run it themselves?
Yeah, you can try. Yeah, everyone can try downloading Hugging Face and on GitHub. You can just easy to access it and where it's still running it. Yeah, it could be very easier thing. And if you want to see that how it's chat, we also just upload a file that is for the inferencing, and you can just use it too easily to inference with you on top of like ask them what's your like some philosophy question or like some trying to ask it to help you. That is what happens here. Yeah,
that is really cool. Nice. And I invite everyone to try it out. I unfortunately didn't have the time myself to try it out yet, but I'm very curious, and I'm also very curious where this is developing to. Maybe one more question on that project. So, what kind of training data are you using or what are you planning to use for the scaled up version of it?
Oh, that's a great, good question. That scaling up is always a question for the network, for the GPT or generative for this language modeling. Yeah, for before, like the first scaling up, the first version we're using Open Web Text is a very small data with only 30 billion tokens or words. Like 30 billion words is very small language modeling. Yeah, so it's not enough for modeling with a large language model for just tens of billion. We're now using that pile. The pile has 300 billion of the tokens or words to pre-training on that, which has been also looks like this ImageNet. It has become a standard of the language modeling. But the pile is larger and it's not enough, but it's not so large. And beyond that, because we are also working with Raku, yeah, for myself, so we are planning to using Raku's training data, like using the 1 trillion training tokens or 1 trillion words. It has been highly, highly washes, like the clean, it's very clean data, and we're trying to use it. Its performance can achieve more than Llama 2 or in Mistral, in multilingual, yeah, even in Mistral. Yeah, Mistral is the golden standard of it's the state of the art now for small size model, yeah. And we can use very clean data to training reach 1 trillion to train a very large size, maybe it's 7 billion or even larger. Because yeah, scaling also indicates that with the language modeling, the size grows up, your data size should also be scaling up to match the model size. Yeah, model parameters. So, yeah, and
otherwise,
also
it will be some sort of overfitting, I guess.
Yeah.
So if we were already mentioning that spiking neural networks are maybe a good choice for cases of continuous learning, and I was just wondering, as we have RLHF, like reinforcement learning with human feedback, in the combination with big transformer models, Is this also a direction in which you would like to go? And if so, is it would you also try to go like the traditional ANN way and do the reinforcement learning in that way? Or do you see a chance for your specific model architecture to also combine it with, for example, Hebbian learning rules?
And this is so there is very meaningful things like we can use Hebbian rules. For our HF or reinforcement learning with human feedback, it's more like we just attach acceleration parts of this language model and trying to optimize the main performance. So that if we can use a Hebbian rule, that is definitely a good thing. But if we cannot apply it, I still think that we are meaningful. It's a meaningful task. Because it's just like the accelerating parts, we are trying to first fix the language modeling, you optimize the parameters. But after that, we can just draw through the accelerate part and just using the main part. So this is looks like that the ANNs will become the accelerate part of SN. And after the optimize the SNs, you can just throughout them. So I think that if we can use the Hebbian rule sets, it can help us. But now I think that it's more possible to using the ANNs to using the RHF. But in future, maybe we can imagine that we can use the Hebbian rules, so this continuous learning rules, instead of RHF to just do fine tuning or doing alignments, because it will become personal alignments instead of the everyone knows that everyone's size of alignment. Like ChatGPT will answer the same question when you ask some like the inappropriate question in problems. So, but this is maybe some problem for other stuff. For other people, is not suitable. But for you, maybe it's appropriate. It should be solved by the or be answered by ChatGPT. So it's personal alignment that can do these things. It looks like that everyone has his own ChatGPT and it will run as everyone's their preferences and what it looks like. So I think that. Yeah. If it's viable, we can find that using RHF with ANNs is good things. But if we find it not viable, like until now, because Hebbian rules seems like it's not like a good auxiliary pass to attach it to the main body. So it looks like, so it depends mostly. But this has been a very high performance, it's very potential to be used for build up everyone's own personal side, personal ChatGPT or personal alignments. This is very good things, I think. Yeah.
What do you see, like, what is the time frame in which you see your model or similar models to be really, let's say, be used by end users, or when we really have these things, maybe even on neuromorphic hardware in our devices? What do you think? Is it like 5 years, 10 years, 20 years? What is realistic in your point of view?
I think that now it's available to use it to test it as a research. But maybe 5 years later, we can do something like five years ago, what neuromorphic did do? So 5 years ago is that Loihi 1 is very small chip and just some small number of chip. If 5 years ago I'm a researcher, I'm doing my PhD program, I only can choose Loihi and SpineMaker, this very beautiful research. But now we can use Senescence, it is chips, Spring chips, they're chips. And we have lots of choice to use as neuromorphic. So, but its size is still relatively small. This is because that is before this ChatGPT area, language modeling area, the spiking network is mainly used for edge devices. And this because the computer vision and with computer vision tasks, for computer vision tasks, its model size is relatively small. Like an autonomous driving, its model size is maybe just one of 100 million sizes instead of the ChatGPT has 100 billion sizes, so it's 1,000 times. So before that, there's most of devices built for that edge device. But now I think that this is because the spine neural network the developer pathway is mainly on edge devices. But now, and go beyond, and more, like 5 years later or 10 years later, I think that it will, maybe 5 years later, we can see a language modeling chip for that, or it can be handling very large time, large size of snaps and SOMA and everything on it. So I think this could be very fast because, see, yeah, first we can use, if we can do manufacture, we can do using FPGA and trying to debug with it. So I think we can soon see a very good, I'm very optimistic for these things. Yeah, like it should be very soon to see that real cheap for running for spike, you know, for language modeling, and it can be applied for industry. Yeah, so I think it's
I'm glad to hear that. Very exciting. Yeah,
yeah. So
I think also there's like lots of development on the chip side, right? They're starting to actually not starting, it's already quite a while out there, this idea of having optical neuromorphic chips and many other ideas. And I think one nice thing about that is also that they are very fast, right? So also the computational speed, we didn't even mention that, but in many cases, due to this inherent parallelism, spiking neural networks are very fast if you don't necessarily run them on traditional hardware.
It's sparse. Yeah, so it's sparse and fast, so it needs to be very fast, running very fast, maybe 1,000 faster in some cases. Yeah, for general,
yeah, that makes it even more exciting. Glad to hear that. So I'm always observing the field, and I think I will also continue observing that and also observe your research. Thank you so much for having you here and giving us some insights. And if you would like to add something more, feel free. Otherwise, I'm sure that I will have you here in my podcast again in a couple of months or year. And
thank you so much, Johannes. I think it's very, very nice topic to talk with you, like in podcast. It's very free talks, and I can mostly talk about my opinion and what's happened. Also, what happened next? It's very enjoyable experience with you. Yeah, thank you so much for
your invitation. Thank you for being here. Yeah, and I think we could probably spend a couple of more hours talking about the topic. We only touched the surface, but yeah, let's see where things are going. And I wish you a good day. For you now, it's early in the morning. For me, it's evening. You can see the light. Now it's became much darker. Thanks again, and see you soon, hopefully.
See you soon. Thank you so much. Have a good night.